Happy Thursday, my darling pop culture junkies. It's Pop Culture Mondays on Thursdays, and it's me, Brooke. Pop Culture Mondays on Thursdays. Hello, everyone. I am so happy to be here. This is my sort of escape from the panic, as I am theoretically supposed to be packed and ready to go at the crack of dawn tomorrow for a 3.5 week, 4 city, 4 country tour, birthday tour that I am completely unprepared for. I have not really packed. I've theoretically packed. So I've put things in piles, and I'm trying to do this. I don't know. I'm trying to pack. There's Washington, D.C. for the White House Correspondents' Weekend, which requires an entire type of wardrobe, and I also have meetings there. But it's also generally sort of humid in D.C., though I just checked the weather, and it's meant to be like in the 60s when I'm there. So that throws a curveball. And then there are party events and events like at nighttime, completely separate from anything I would wear anywhere else. Because let me tell you, Brooke in DC is very different than Brooke in any other part of the world. I am not, I pretend, I totally cosplay when I'm in DC. It's hilarious. I like wear navy pantsuits. Like, who am I? But it's just one of those weird towns that you feel that you sort of have to do that. And if you dress in anything remotely, I don't know, sexy or casual, like California style, it doesn't fly. Like, it's pantsuit. Like, it's what Ann Taylor was made for. I don't have any Ann Taylor, but just I'm giving you the visual. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to insult you, my DC friends. It's just the vibe. So I've had to go and update my wardrobe a slight tad. But then I have Jamaica, and it's obviously, you would say, okay, just throw a couple of bikinis and a sarong and a flip flops and call it a day, which is my normal thing. But it's my birthday party, and I have outfits, and I have days upon days, and then I have outfit changes. And then there's like an 80s party. So there's 80s stuff. And then I also am transporting a bunch of stuff for gift bags that I have to put into my suitcases. So it's a lot. And I hate not having something. So I'm trying to do the suitcase for DC and Jamaica, to which point I will find a delightful friend who's leaving Jamaica and going back to LA to take said suitcase with them, and have another suitcase entirely for Germany. Yes, Germany and Paris, which are also two very different environments and purposes. So I have to have an entirely different suitcase filled with entirely different clothes. Some of it's work. It's a conference in Germany, but it's Germany, it's Hamburg. So it's still sort of like conference cool. And it's also sort of 60s, which is not Jamaica. And then it's Paris, where I cannot look like my DC self or even my German self when I'm in Paris. Like, I am totally Emily in Parising it up. I have outfits, I have scarves, I have layers. So when it's cooler at night, and then there's Taylor Swift concert. So then you have to have T-Swift stuff. It's, you know, honestly, guys, I just want you to send me your thoughts and prayers. And by the time you're listening to this, I will be well on my way. I am sure I am over limit. Delta's going to be like, that'll be $400 with the stuff I'm trying to bring. I am sure when I get to Jamaica, they'll see me bringing in 2,000 tabs of Advil and think that I'm a drug mule of some kind, because I have Advil for the gift bags, obviously, for all my friends, because they're going to have Advil to deal with their headaches. So we'll see. It's going to be a trip. I am TBD on whether there's going to be a podcast next week. David and I have been sort of thinking about it. I'm not traveling. To add to everything, I'm not traveling with my kit, which is the mic and the headphones and the whole thing. But perhaps even if there's some slight audio differences, I can do it with the ocean crashing behind me, and you guys get the full Jamaica experience. So it's a TBD. It's a TBD. I cannot tell you one way or another. It's also if I'm like actually in Jamaica and haven't been held hostage by some sort of customs official at that point with all of my Advil. So it's really, who's to say? But I will tell you, the thing that I'll be listening to get me through all the stress is the new Taylor Swift double album, The Tortured Poets Department, otherwise known as TTPD, which I quite like because for those of you who don't know, I have a strategic media advisory. This is a small little company I put together after I sold my agency. And this strategic media advisory is amazing. It's like, I am so blessed to be able to work with Rebecca and all of the clients we work with and be so nimble and staff zero, as Kara Swisher and I love to say. Just not that I don't love people working with me, but I like a flat organization. I'm not comfortable being a boss, if you will. And we just have the most amazing quality of life and work, and we work really hard, but the company's name is The New Thing. And really, it was really a holding name meant to be sort of just in jest for while I figured out what the name of the advisory was going to be. And it sort of stuck. People shortened it to TNNT. So I love that the album is TTPD. It's the same TNNT, TTPD. Like, I'm all for acronyms. It's great. Though I don't know if, is that considered an acronym or just the initials? Whatever. Listen, you guys have thoughts on this album. I understand. I do. As one of my friends said, she's a folklore girly. And I think I subscribe to that, though. I do like pop. I like a banger. I like music that I can sing at the top of my lungs. And you don't really get that with this. And, you know, when I woke up, well, so the album released at midnight on Friday morning of last week, meaning it was midnight Eastern. So 9 p.m. California, which is one of the advantages of being on the West Coast. I'm like, great. I don't have to wake up or stay up. It's nine. I'm listening to it. And I really liked it. It's mellow. I mean, but I'm going to say it's the same to me as, like, I loved Beyonce's album. I just, to me, Beyonce's album was sort of, there's so many different pieces to it that it just wasn't cohesive, but I loved listening to it. And I loved like individual songs, and there's some bangers on there, but it's also like melancholy and then slow and then fast. And, you know, I've said it here. I was like, for me, it just didn't have a cohesiveness. This album, the flip side, you could say is overly cohesive. Like, one song blends into another. And at first it's just sort of hard to differentiate because there are a lot of words, and it's very mellow, and it's very wrought, and it feels very much like exactly like what it says, the tortured poets department. Like, you feel like you're in a classroom in a liberal arts college where very earnest group of students wrote all of their feelings down. And like that one guy, the hot guy who like probably hacky sacks and has a bong in his room, is like strumming the guitar, and like in he knows like four chords, and each person puts their poem or short story to a song and to the music, but it's only one of those four chords. That's sort of how I feel this album was. And I wasn't hating it. Like, there's certain things that I quite like the London song, which I keep saying Goodbye London, but I don't think that's what it's called. It's like See You Later London. It's something like, I quite like the London song. It's an answer to, I think it's So Long London. And it was an answer to a more boppier song from her Lover album called London Boy, which is all about her sort of obviously falling in love with her at the time fiance and living in London. And then this was So Long London, the answer to that. I quite like it. And I love the one with Post Malone. I am also very much a petty bitch. I am very, very much a petty bitch. And so I love the Kim Kardashian one. But before we get to that, the thing that's so interesting is that a few of my friends saw me post the fact that I listened to the album, and I was going to bed like feeling like a cool girly, like a cool 16-year-old, because I had listened to the whole album before going to sleep. And, you know, we had this conversation. Some of them were not as excited about it as they have been in other albums. And others were like, I need to let it kind of take over and spend more time with it. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to give it another listen, obviously, in the morning and see how I feel. And so I wake up and there's all this like chatter, and I'm trying to navigate. I'm like, wait, what did I miss? Because I went to bed at 11 o'clock my time. Like, what did I miss? And it turns out that right when I turned off my phone and went to my going to sleep process, the brilliant Taylor Swift dropped another entire album, making this a double album, 31 songs in total. So I went to sleep thinking I was ahead of the game, and I woke up feeling very, very behind because all of these girlies had woken up and listened to all of these other songs. So I was frantically trying to get all of the songs, and I had a lot of meetings that day. And fortunately, there is now a Taylor Swift radio on Sirius XM, channel 13, obviously, where it's nothing but Taylor, and they were obviously playing nothing but the new albums. And so what's interesting about the station, which I quite like, is that she does sort of intros every few songs. You hear her talking about the meaning of that song or what got her, sort of what her intent was or what her sort of feelings were at the time. So that was really helpful. And then I had some appointments, and I'd park my car and I'd go into the appointment, and they were playing the album too, like never stopped. It was like a continuum throughout the entire day. My house, the album. My car, the album. The doctor's office, the album. The nail salon, the album. The hair salon, the album. It sounds like I have a really like luxurious life, but it just happened to be one of those days where I had a bunch of appointments, and it was the album. Like, it was just one continuum. So I also, though, as a result, didn't get to hear the entire album in sequence. So I have since done that, and it's a lot. I would say, the New York Times got a lot of criticism because they said she needs an editor, which I thought was funny because I think the New York Times could use some editors in some of their decision making. It's a long, long album. And I think on the flip side of the Beyonce is that, as I say, it's too consistently thread. And so it's the hacky sack guy with the four chords, and 31 students wrote 31 very wrought, like very much out of our, what we've talked about here before. Joe lies when he cries. If you remember, Lily Taylor had like 64 songs all written about Joe. And I feel like this was that. Now, speaking of Joe, a lot of people thought this was going to be the breakup album about her breakup of Joe Alwyn, the actor that she was engaged to, who to me, he seems very sweet. He's like as vanilla as they get. Like, and I say this as an Anglophile, like most of the men in my life that I've loved have been English or Irish in some capacity. So I have a soft spot for them, but he just in particular felt very, very vanilla. And there is a song, and that's certainly the London song is one, and maybe there are others, and I'm not here to go through all of them, but I mean, there's some other songs. And so then there's the Maddie Healy song, which is theoretically, she hasn't confirmed, but like all evidence points to it being about Maddie Healy from the 1975, the band that he's the bad boy. And they had this sort of romance that they sort of played out for the crowds. And it was only a couple of weeks, but apparently they'd been in each other's lives on and off for years. And this was the precursor to the football player, to little Travis Kelce. I like that song because it's a song that I would write about an ex-boyfriend. Like, it is vengeful. It is dark. It is, outing him. Like, you got pills through my friend's friends. Like, he was taking pills. He was a mess. He was a gaslighter. My analysis of one of the lines is that he is a small penis, is he's a small man in every way a man doesn't want to be. That to me basically says you have a small penis.
I love how Taylor Swift was like, hey, are you like 30 and finally over that super toxic decade long on again, off again relationship that all your friends and family hated and almost ruined your 20s and your life? Why don't you listen to this? Anyway, hope everybody's okay. Don't text your ex today.
I'm here for it. I'm also here for Thank You, Amy, which is spelled on the album with the K capitalized, the I in Amy capitalized, and the M in Amy capitalized. Amy in this particular title spelled A-I-M-E-E. And it starts off with a bronze statue reference. And there's just no denying this is about Kim Kardashian. Taylor Swift's ongoing feud where she has taken personal, umbrage with Kim Kardashian's role in the bullying that took place with Kanye West and Taylor. Now, the initial bullying of Kanye West of Taylor Swift predates Kim. So that was long before he was with Kim. Kim was on one of her other marriages. That's when Kanye stormed the stage at the MTV Music Awards and demanded that Beyonce be recognized and that she had the video of the year and not Taylor. And it was really, really terrible to see sort of an older man just sort of push a young woman out of the way. There it brought up race issues, but really it brought up sexism issues and just started to see the cracks in Kanye's sort of veneer at that point, because like it was out of control behavior. But fast forward to then Kanye saying about Taylor Swift and saying, I made that bitch famous and I want to have sex with Taylor Swift. Da, 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 da. She was outraged by it and came out pretty upset about it, at which point Kim and Kanye claimed that they told her and that they had a voice recording of it, that they were on the phone and that she really loved it and totally, and released that audio, which in turn turned out to be edited and very easily discoverable that it was edited. But by that point, the damage was done. People like the drama. They don't necessarily like the solution. So the drama was that, you know, Kim and Kanye were like trying to out Taylor for being a liar. And by that point, when Taylor was finally proven to not be, the sort of story had gone a different direction. Taylor Swift has talked about it in the Time magazine interview when she was named Person of the Year, and talked about how dark a time that was for her and how she actually had to leave the country and go and stay in a house for a year. Then she just needed to sort of decompress. And so we already were aware of that side of that story, but it came out in full swing. And for any of you pop culture, like close followers, people have always been trying to sort of connect now the two, seeing Northwest, the child, one of their children, singing Taylor Swift songs or doing TikToks with Taylor Swift. Everyone's like, what does that mean? What does that mean? And like, were they at the Taylor Swift concert or at the Super Bowl? You had, you know, Taylor Swift on one side and Kim at another box with her family. And they're always trying to see like, what does it all mean? Is there something coded? Well, we have an answer. It's not really that coded, though the song alludes to being subtle. Like, people won't know it's about you. It's pretty clear it's about you just in how it's spelled.
This is my impression of Kourtney Kardashian listening to Thank You, Amy by Taylor Swift. Did she just say tanned? I think this is about Kim. Chris, did you listen to Taylor Swift's new song? Are we having a family meeting about this? Hey, Traffy. Did she ask you to do the drums on this song? If not, that's kind of rude. Hey, Kim, how are you feeling? But this is why I always tell you to eat organic, and then people wouldn't be coming after you. Try and live a dairy-free life. It'll help.
I don't know about you, but I've had revenge fantasies from a very early age. Like, from the time that I could really feel rage and like articulate it was probably about like seventh grade. And I don't know about you, I had bullies. I had bullies in like fifth, sixth, seventh grade. I had, you know, it's not just like I wasn't bullied per se, but there were people that were mean. There were people that were just unkind, that would make your life miserable for a couple of days, or even your close friends, when especially girls, we were just so mean to each other. They would pick a day that they're not going to talk to you, and you had to go in and your friends wouldn't talk to you and notes were being passed around. All of those were tough. But like, there were some people that were just actively mean in as middle school, mean in high school, mean in college, all different variations. And I've had revenge fantasies of, I'm going to be so successful. I'm going to be famous. I remember it used to be when I was in high school that I would get on David Letterman. I would get on David Letterman and I would sit down and I would be being interviewed for whatever successful thing I was being interviewed for being a part of. And then I would make sure that that person who I hated at that moment in time was just fucking torn to pieces, where David Letterman made fun of her. I brought it up, like, it's revenge. And then writing something, whether it's a book or a TV show or a movie, that's going to center around the person who caused me wrong, and I was going to destroy them. And I've never done that. My mother taught me, when somebody really upset me and I wanted to lash out or say something to them, write a letter. Write it all down, put that letter in an envelope, address it to them, and then put it under your pillow and sleep on it. And then literally sleep on it. And then when I would wake up, I would either rip up the letter or burn it. My mom had a very dramatic way about her. So a lot of the times it ended up in the fireplace, or she would use a lighter and light it over some newspaper and it was up. And that was supposed to be like me releasing my emotions. I got it out just in a different way. which I still, I find very valuable. I email has made it a little trickier because sometimes there's a quick email and text. I like, my thumbs are faster sometimes than my, you know, brain in terms of like, let's just calm down a minute. Let's take a deep breath. But hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And that's not just about men. That is about girls and girls being mean. And Taylor Swift is like still in her 16-year-old self when she's sitting there with the hacky sack player with the four chords. And she wrote Revenge Song, not just about the men who broke her heart, but about a girl who really tortured her and made her life really difficult. But she also tries to say that, like, I grew as a result. Like, you gave me a gift, an unintended gift. So the album is wild. It is truly one of those sort of mega things that you may have not the most positive feelings about, and that's okay. Like, it's like I've said about all music, it's subjective. I don't know anybody though who gets criticized for writing too much or for having too many songs. Like, it's so bizarre. There's always going to be something to criticize this woman about. So there's a lot of criticism that she's written too much, that this was too prolific, this was too long, there's too many songs, there are too many words. I mean, my God, if she didn't write an album for 2 years, she'd be criticized for, where is Taylor Swift? Why isn't she released it? It's like, this girl cannot win. But my last thoughts on this, and I know some of you are white middle-aged men listening to this, the amount of white middle-aged men who are really worked up by this, they get so worked up. Like, my, and Facebook is just, it's so embarrassing. As I turn 50, I am reminded, like, I still act and feel like I'm 17, but lo and behold, I go on Facebook and I see my peer group and I'm like, what the fuck? I think I've sort of avoided that, the trappings that they've fallen prey to. But, you know, also I'm not posting prom pictures of my kids. And I love seeing my friends' prom pictures, but their kids' prom pictures, I should say. But the white middle-aged men who are like, oh my God, she wrote a breakup song about so-and-so. Oh my God, she wrote a song about Travis, with the eye roll emoji. And then the commentary of people, not all men, there's some Karens in there. It's everyone. They're so worked up. They have such opinions. They have such, it's so fucking bananas. Like, let this girl, yeah, she's this cultural zeitgeist. And if you don't like her music, that's one thing. But if you're not even a fan, but you're making commentary based on rumors, you probably haven't even listened to the album. You're just reading something from the Daily Mail or from your other Facebook pages or people that you're passing on, and you don't even know what you're talking about. You get so worked up. I mean, take a look at yourselves in the mirrors and ask the question, why? Why is this so triggering to you? It's hilarious. Moving on though, because we have a few more minutes to talk about some stuff that's just not T-Swift, but it is revenge. I will say another sort of theme in revenge is, guys, have you seen the show Baby Reindeer? Holy moly. I'm going to tell you, it was a struggle for me to watch a show, even though everybody in my life was like, oh my God, you have to watch Baby Reindeer. And I was seeing this sort of TikToks about it coming out. When I first started seeing the TikToks, it was like, this show is insane. Oh my God, everybody has to see the show. It's on Netflix and it's a limited series for me. I don't know how many episodes it was, but it was a struggle for me. It is a very emotional show, piece. I don't even know, a story. Here's the kicker. The creator of it, who's also the star of it, it's a true story. And the story basically, it seems like a stalker story, but there's a lot more complexities to it. But the guy who, Richard Gadd, he is the creator, he is the star, he's the writer. He works at a bar and a pub in London. And this what can I say about this woman, the character who plays this woman, or Martha? She is clearly flummoxed when she walks into the pub. She is a little chaotic. She is unkempt. She's quite heavy set, but even more so made to look more so in terms of how she dresses and how she presents herself. She says she can't afford anything to eat or drink. He gives her a cup of tea on the house and try and just sees something in her, this sort of tortured woman who's come to the pub and doesn't have any money to order anything and looks overwhelmed. And he just simply asks, like, oh, what do you do? And she proceeds to go into this whole story about how she's one of the most powerful, like, attorneys, and she has her own law firm, and she works with all of the big names like David Cameron and all of the top politicians and prime ministers, and like even Nick Clegg gets a name check, who's at Facebook now. And she shows him pictures, or not even pictures at that point, she's showing him numbers in her phone, like contacts that have their names to it. And he's like aware of the fact that she's clearly gotta be lying, because the most successful barrister, owner of a law firm, come into a pub who can't even afford a cup of tea? But she just goes on these wild stories, and there's something that he finds really appealing about her, or maybe just, you know, the backstory unfolds with him where he is coming from trauma, and maybe finding somebody who is more fucked up than you is almost appealing and makes you feel better about yourself. But there's a wide range of themes here. The sort of culmination is that this woman is obsessed with him and starts texting him thousands and thousands and thousands of messages and showing up everywhere and attacking people in his life, if they're women or whoever is in his life. There's struggles with sexuality that come out in this story. There's abuse, sexual abuse that is in the backstories. There is drug use and manipulation. It's really an intense show. I say this, but like, I really enjoyed it, but it was work. It was work in the sense that it's very traumatizing in some ways, but also just, you're like, what? How is this real? So it turns out it is real. This woman was ultimately arrested and charged with this behavior. He has changed her name and some of the storyline. But when he was interviewed, he's like, how do you think, you know, she feels? And he's like, you know, embarrassed. I'm sure she's embarrassed. Like, if she's seeing this, then there's got to be some embarrassment. But it also does feel vengeful on his end, like maybe cathartic for him. He's working through a lot of things that he has experienced, his sort of confusion around his sexuality and his place in life and his career choices and his success and his allowing himself to get into certain situations that you'll see if you watch the show, or if you've seen it, you understand what I'm talking about. And a lack of confidence and certainty of yourself that allowed this sort of behavior. And to be fair, he gave this woman some mixed signals. So you kind of understand what you're dealing with and maybe why she misinterpreted some of the things, clearly because, you know, she was already mentally unstable to begin with. She was also already convicted of stalking other people. Like, you, if you have therapy, you don't need to go to therapy for the entire time you're watching the show, because it is like going through it. It's you going through your therapy on this one. But I liked it. Like, it was so interesting, and it's so interesting that it's a true story and that this was made, and it's a huge success, I believe, for Netflix, at least to my little dumb eyes. I haven't read, Puck and Matt Bellamy's like look at the numbers, but it certainly seems like a success from a social standpoint. People are talking about it. It's being shared. Lots of people, you just have to say Baby Reindeer and everybody knows, and it's wild, but vengeful. Also cathartic maybe for him, but also seemed slightly vengeful. But I could go on. I mean, there's other content. I talked last week about Challengers, the movie. People are just, I think it doesn't come out until this weekend. People are just starting to talk about it now. So if you guys go and see it, I want to hear what your thoughts are. But speaking of like an upcoming movie, I have been so disappointed, as I'm sure many of you have, by M. Night Shyamalan, right? Like, after Sixth Sense, which I don't know one person who was not totally flabbergasted by that movie and completely surprised, and not one person, even those who always know the endings of a movie, saw that one coming. We just never got something that quite matched up. Some of them trying to be a little bit like a little close, but then others just like a whiff. And he has a thing like, okay, we get you, M. Night Shyamalan. It's the, and I'm sorry, that sounds terrible, but I never, M. Night Shyamalan, but I love, I love saying it like I say Timothy Shalamala Bing Bong. Like, it's just one of those names that just loves to roll off my tongue. Shalalaban. Anyway, he has like a formula, you know, you watching a movie, you get into it, and then a twist, a massive twist, one you didn't see coming. There is a new movie that is coming out that is an M. Night Shyamalan movie. And I have to say, I am intrigued. I am enthralled by the trailer. It's called Trap, and it stars Josh Hartnett. Now, let me be clear. I am all about a Josh Hartnett comeback. Britt Morgan Sachs, who has been a frequent guest on this, she has been telling me for years, Josh Hartnett's coming back. Josh Hartnett's coming back. And then we saw him on a very big film, Oppenheimer, and in a very grown-up capacity. You know, we saw him as a sort of a pinup back in the day, and now he was playing an adult. We also saw him on a Black Mirror episode that was incredible. And now he's starring in a new movie, and the premise is fascinating. It starts off with him, like a suburban dad, seeming like a great guy, taking his daughter to effectively a Taylor Swift concert, like this huge act, this singer, this pop singer, and it's all a bunch of screaming girls at the stadium. And he's being such a good dad. And she's like, don't embarrass me, dad, da 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 da. And he's really excited to take her. She's really excited. And it's a daddy-daughter going to a concert thing. And the trailer proceeds to sort of showcase, you start to see, you know, the crowds filling up, you see the pop star come out on stage, and he has to excuse himself to go to the bathroom. And he's like, will you stay here? He's worried. And you start to get stressed, like, oh God, we think that something's going to happen to the girl, while he steps away, leaves her on the floor of the stadium of this massive pop show. And he's going to go. And then, you know, is this going to be like a Taken? You know, are we going to see him turn into Liam Neeson and try to find his daughter in the stadium? But then he starts to notice all this police activity all around. And so he asks somebody at the merch desk after he's gone, or he's on his way to the bathroom, what's going on. And I'm not telling you, by the way, anything that's not in the trailer. So no reveals here. And the guy at the merch desk says something along the lines of, I'm not supposed to tell you, but, you know, the serial killer that's been running around just hacking up people, there is intel that he's here. And they're locking it down. They're going to find him. And you see the dad like freak out, and you immediately, it's set up clearly for to manipulate us all into thinking like the girl is going to be a victim of the serial killer. That's what you think. So you would think he'd race back to the daughter, but instead he's in the bathroom looking at his phone and looking at a live feed to a video where you see somebody being held captive and in a torturous situation. And you realize, holy fuck, he's a serial killer, and he's left his prey sort of locked up some basement somewhere in order to be at this concert with his daughter. He's pretending to be normal. Now, obviously, if that was the whole movie, we would not go and see it because we've just seen the whole thing unfold on the trailer. There are going to be twists and turns, but I mean, this could turn out to be a total disaster. I admit that. But at least for how it's being marketed to me at this moment in time, I'm here for it. I like a comeback. I like when people disappointed me and then can come back and surprise me. I love, not that Josh Hartnett has ever disappointed me, but M. Night has. So I'm here for it. So I'll be interested in hearing what you guys think of the trailer. And then another thing that's gone viral over, like, for 2 years, by the way. So I'm not, this is me being really behind on book talk and whatnot, but I think it's also started to percolate outside of the book talk world and into more mainstream. And that is a series of books called A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. It's a New York Times bestselling author. She has done series before that have gone viral. I am taking some of these books to Jamaica. I do think it's sort of like reading a 50 Shades of Grey situation where it's just basically like fan fiction of something else where you just have these characters and they're just sort of like always biting their lip, you know, and sighing and then having lots and lots of crazy sex. The difference here is I believe they're fairies we're talking about, like fairies and werewolves and stuff. All I know is a very normal friend of mine was like, it's fairy sex. And I was like, is typo question mark? And she's like, no typo, it's fairies. And they're having a lot of sex. It's like mystical sex, mystical world sex. I'm here for it. if my normal friends who never lead me astray are like, this is something we need to pay attention to. Now, I may hide it behind another book when I'm reading it. I'm not going to like whip it out on the plane because I don't want people around me to know that I'm reading about fairy sex. I am very excited to check this whole situation out. I need a page turner. And all I know is there are tens of millions, not even, maybe 100 million views on like across the TikTok platform on just this TikTok, you know, book talk around these books. So it's huge. And that's it. I'm going to also say you may find if you're a parent to a teenager, kids talking about shows that you watched when they first came out. So Grey's Anatomy, Girls, Friends, all of these, Sex and the City, all of them are now streaming and a whole new generation is watching it for the first time. And they are reacting to it, and they're reacting to it from the mindset of a Gen Z person. So like certain things that we just took for granted, we're like, oh, whatever. They're like shocked about, shocked. And they look at it through a different lens. So they put it on TikTok and then they're like, they'll be outraged over something Phoebe did in Friends that I was completely, completely devoid of emotion around. And they're like up in arms. Or they sort of, you know, laugh something off in Grey's Anatomy that would have really shook me to my core. So it's really interesting to see kids with watching the same stuff we watched for the first time through a different lens and then talk about it on social media. And however long that's going to happen for, because we may see TikTok go away. They have made it clear, the U.S. government, which has banned TikTok before they banned assault weapons. So there you go. That TikTok is more dangerous than assault weapons, but they've ordered the Chinese government who owns TikTok that they have to divest the US versions. That means they have to sell a piece of the company and have it be completely solely operated outside of Asia, I guess. So, I mean, because it's currently run out of Singapore, but that did not suffice. So who knows how long TikTok is for this world. There are other social media platforms launching all the time, really annoying. Like there's this new one called AirChat, which is Twitter, but with audio. I'm sorry. No, I don't think the olds need another social platform. I'd love to see a Gen Z person build something that is the answer to that. But people are still trying. Be Real still out there. And Snap is obviously really big amongst the kids. So we'll see where we all end up. Who's to say? But that is it for now, my lovelies. My makeout Mary Mute. My makeout is Josh Hartnett. Sorry, Britt Morgan Sachs. My makeout is Josh Hartnett. In any capacity, I find this sort of like he's dad bod now. Like clearly he's sapped my brain, but I am ready. And I, whoever's doing his agent or whatnot, like chef's kiss. I really hope this movie turns out to be a surprise and a good one. My Mary is, this is a shocker, Mark Zuckerberg with facial hair. I mean, I just, because I don't want to make out with you, Mark, but marriage like would be fun. Like, I think your family is great. You have a dog with dreadlocks. I'm into it. But you've really turned a corner. Like Mark Zuckerberg posted a video and I took a screen grab of it because he was wearing a silver chain and he just looked different. And I sent it to Kara Swisher and I was like, when did this happen? And sure enough, I was a trendsetter because then like a day later, somebody used AI to add facial hair to Mark and Mark looked like a little bit like Dave Portnoy. I'm not going to lie, from Barstool Sports, but like he had swag. Like what the fuck? Where did this come from? Like little baby faced evil Mark Zuckerberg turned into like sort of like a hey there. And it went viral and he and his wife leaned into it. It's really funny. Like Mark posted who did this. And then Priscilla posted on Instagram, posted a picture of it. Said, has anyone seen my husband or like whose husband is this or something along those lines. Mark posted something else with like a razor with a, like, should he not be shaving anymore? Should he grow a beard? So I think that's cute. And I'd like to marry into that family just for a day. It would be pretty fascinating. And I'm sorry, but I think they're lovely. We need lovely right now in the tech world because everybody else is turned into Marvel villains, frankly. And I feel like Mark was the original Marvel villain who's now turned into like more of a down home guy. It's so strange. So strange how that happens. And then I'd mute all the middle-aged people all up in arms about Taylor Swift. You're so boring. You're so basic. Sorry. Face it. You are. You know who you are. You are. It's okay. I still love you. I just muting you for a moment. I'll unmute you in a week. All right, my darlings, have a wonderful rest of your week, and I hope to see you next week. I'll have a newsletter for sure. Again, I'm just rolling with the tides on this one, so we'll just have to see. Thank you, David, for being a great producer, and see you guys soon. Pop culture.